and Hobbs Goblins, as that's what the vote was on the G+ community. All the listeners decided that's what they wanted to be called. Welcome to Hobbs and Friends with the OSR. I'm your host, Jason Hobbs, and today I have my partner in crime with Hobbs and Friends with the OSR, Chris Sneezak. How's it going, Chris?
It's really good to be here, Jason. I'm happy to be a friend of the OSR.
You were a friend of the OSR before the podcast existed, I think.
That's true. But I mean, now it's like official and stuff, right?
That's right. That's right. I mean, and that's what we pride ourselves on here at Misdirected Mark Productions, officialness.
Yes, we're so professional. Professional. All the in-jokes. Let's see how many of these in-jokes from other shows I could fit into this episode.
Oh, boy. My Hobbs Goblins will love it. Did you see that that's what they had voted on to be called?
I didn't. That's amazingly cool, though. I love the idea of Hobbs Goblins. That's a great name. You should really get like a little goblin that's dressed up like the Hobgoblin from Spider-Man as like your like mascot.
I think Kevin Madison, the guy who did the most recent image for the podcast, me as the stone giant in Castle Amber, he seemed like he was interested in maybe doing a drawing of it. So we'll see, I guess.
Oh, nice. I hopefully that goes really well.
Yeah, the one he did is totally awesome. So it's pretty darn cool. So let's get this show started, I guess, huh? I got some stuff here about you, the mastermind of Misdirected Mark Productions, which I didn't even know what Misdirected Mark was from until recently on a Down with D&D. It's some feat or something from a bard or what on D&D?
It's a fourth edition bard power.
Well, that's why, because I don't play fourth edition. Nice. Mm-hmm. All right. So do you want to talk about some author credits too, or what do you go ahead?
Sure. I wrote the adventure in the Book of the Tarrasque. I am one of the designers on Part-Time Gods of Fate, the Fate edition of Part-Time Gods. I have wrote a very small part of the Dracula dossier, which won like a billion Ennies. I have written a number of D&D adventures for organized play at this point, like the content created adventures for Baldwin Games and some Living Forgotten Realms stuff. And I am currently working on an AL adventure. So like actual Adventurers League adventure. So I'm doing that. I have other ones. I think it's hard to always pull them all out all at once. So, those are some of my writing credits.
All right. So that's, one of the things I've posted on here about you. The other one says editor of Hobbs and Friends, and how much of the pain in the ass is that?
It's not actually, this is one of the easier shows to edit. Strangely enough, it's always 40 minutes. About like the longest it gets is 45 minutes. And
that was Phil.
Yeah. You and generally your guests are pretty good about their speech pattern. So it's not really a difficult edit at all. It doesn't take me very long.
Good. Well, I know that I appreciate it. And I'm pretty sure all the Hobbs Goblins out there do too.
I mean, the more we can say Hobbs Goblins this episode, the better. I'm just saying.
I think so. I don't know if you've noticed, but I was trying to get it in there.
Uh-huh. I mean, Hobbs Goblins are amazing. Like, I wonder if they fly around on little gliders. Like, I know I'm totally taking this comic book, but I'm a big comic book fan. So.
Yeah, you are going comic book instead of the Hobgoblin monster from, basic or monster manual.
So Hobbs, like how do we know each other, man? How do we meet?
Now you're taking over my job. You know, I usually go to other podcasts and try to moderate them. So I think we met at Game Hole in 2016. You're supposed to be at 2017, and I know you wished you got to go, but
yeah, I did.
We certainly missed you there.
I was really sad that I couldn't. We met because we were sitting at the gaming and BS booth, but you had a bunch of beer and you were sharing beer with me. It was great.
Oh, I'm known for that at cons, actually. So if you're ever looking for someone who's going to have beer, it'll probably be me at a con. It was a little different because we were in a different place this year than we were last year. Mm-hmm. It was actually kind of down farther from where you came in the main door. So it wasn't before we had a lot of people trying to get by there. It seemed like going up the stairs to the games and stuff, but they opened up mm-hmm. another room there. So it was pretty nice for us and for people. I mean, we kind of seemed like we were shunted off a little bit, but it was still an awesome place, and it's a pretty cool for a con to have a podcast row, in my opinion. So
I agree.
Yeah. I've never seen them anywhere else. That's for sure. And we were right next to gaming and BS. So that was awesome. Go ahead.
Yeah. You see you see radio rows at big sporting events like the Super Bowl or like, you know, the NBA finals or, you know, the NHL finals or things like that. Well, wherever there's a location, right? Like that's where all the radio people set up. So, I mean, I'm pretty sure that's where Alex Kammer got that idea from, but it's pretty neat that it exists.
Yeah, I even got a press pass for my badge to get in. So it was pretty singular. Everyone was like, why does your badge look like that? oh, you know, I'm Jason. Oh, we know that, but why does your badge look different? No, I'm just kidding.
Because you're press. That's why.
All right. So we met at Game Hole, and you ran Dungeon World there for me and Bird and Wayne, the Lum Runner Humfleet, which was fun. And then you played my Kalmata game for a few sessions, and we got to play 5e, right? Online.
We have. Yes, that is true. That is exactly what we've done.
As often as I hear your voice, it's hard for me to believe that I've only met you the one time at Game Hole, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, at this point in my life, I have so many friends that I've only met in person, like 1 to 4 times. So, I mean, you know, it's a thing. Like, that's the great thing about the internet, right?
I guess so. I guess we're all a little bit closer, right? Hoping to see you at GaryCon, or if not that, Origins, maybe next year, right?
Oh, we're going to be at Origins. All of us are going to be at Origins. It's fine. If you're a Misdirected Mark fan of any kind, just come to Origins and hang out with us. We're going to be doing events. We're going to be doing a lot of things, actually.
Yeah, it's going to be pretty fun. I think Brett's going too, so we'll have a lot of podcast people there. And sounds like almost all the Misdirected Mark network people, so that'll be sweet.
I think a good number of the shows will be represented. I think 6 to 8 of the shows will actually be there.
I'm trying to talk the Hoff into coming too, so we'll see what happens. Mm. All right, so let's move on to our gaming in the last week or two. You want to go first?
Sure. I've been running Dungeon World instead of 5th Edition on Monday nights these days. We switched over. We're playing a thing called Odvex Castle. It is very point crawly, and it's a lot of fun. And they're just now getting really into the castle proper, where they're discovering that the place is very extra dimensional, and how you get around is strange.
That sounds fun. That's still with like GM Gerrymander and Old Man Logan and Andrew, right?
Yep, Drew Smith, the secret weapon of the show. Yep, absolutely. And Robert Dorgan, who's one of the longest running patrons and a really cool guy.
Yeah, I haven't been making it to that game. I don't know if I'm scared of Dungeon World or what.
That's okay. That game is going really well. We have a really good group, a lot of good characters. Like, it's really fun.
I'm not sure there'd be room for Montellus if I was to bring him back from the last Dungeon World game. I don't even know if you remember him, but anyway.
I vaguely remember him. It's hard because I run so much Dungeon World. I've played so much Dungeon World since then too. So it's hard to remember different characters from one shots. No, I've also been playing Dresden Files Accelerated and running Dresden Files Accelerated. So I'm playing it on Wednesday evenings with Brett and Emily from She's a Super Geek, Brett from Gaming and BS, Tom Flanagan from the Knights of the Night, and Kevin Lovecraft, who is the glue that holds Misdirected Mark and Gaming and BS together, along with he's also part of some of the actual play stuff that goes on over on the Gauntlet. Yeah. So that game is a ton of fun. Tom Flanagan's running it. And I'm a big Dresden Files fan, so that makes me really happy to be playing in that. And I'm also running a Dresden Files game as a home game every other week on Wednesdays and the opposite Wednesday.
Oh, that sounds pretty awesome. I have ran a little bit of Accelerated myself, but I'm not really a Fate person too much. But you never know, right? So I don't have a closed mind against it. I felt like I went through a dry spell for a while, but I feel like I have a bunch of stuff on here to talk about. Like we played in Paul Wolf's Philic Isles game, which is a Labyrinth Lord-y kind of 5e mashup, hex crawly type game. I ran my Kalmata game for some different people, like Roger Braslett got to play. Eric Farmer has played now. So I'm getting some other people who haven't normally played in the game playing, and it's pretty fun. It's almost like I learn something every time, though, which is awesome. And I don't know what we're up to now, 30 sessions, 25 sessions or something like that. We finally started the Keep on the Borderlands finale that Edwin and I were calling out the Hoff for. And that was pretty crazy. We saved the Castellan. I don't know if you know much about the Keep on the Borderlands, but there's no spoilers since it's like 40 years old, right?
True facts. The spoiler thing is off after like 10 years. So
we saved the Castellan from what's going on. But unfortunately, the giant humanoid, demi-human army is attacking us, and we're using some kind of cobbled up system that Eric kind of made up that's very similar to just the regular BX system, but it's mass combat instead. So far so good. We've killed one of the hill giants, and but there is a demon that they call the witch that's been wreaking havoc with fireballs on us. So I mean, we're only like 3rd or 4th level. It's not like we're these ultra powerful dudes, so it's, we could all die at the moment of at the drop of a hat, really. I got to play Siege Perilous with ShyWiz, who is a longtime blogger, probably one of the first OSR blogging guys around. He kind of disappeared for a while, but he actually found me at Gamehole Con, and then he had this game, which is based on Swords and Wizardry White Box, but it's that's the chassis, but he's also playing Ultima from the old Lord British games. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I do. I'm very, very familiar with Ultima.
Oh, well, you're probably more familiar than I am because, I mean, I played them, but it's been 20 years. I didn't play Ultima Online or anything like that, and this is off of the first, second, and third games. And we started with our own, we were ourselves when it started, which is seems like an Ultima thing. That's what someone was telling me, so that's pretty cool. I also got to play with Matt Jackson in his fantasy medieval adventure game, which is also a Swords and Wizardry White Box game last night. So I've been playing a lot, so that's pretty exciting. I'm getting myself refreshed so I can start doing more creativity on my own. So everything about you, Chris, you get to hear this every week when you edit. I'm sure you know exactly what it's about. You want to start? Or you want me to?
I'll go first. I used to be a musician, and by musician, I used to be a trumpet player, and I used to get paid to play functions and weddings and graduations and whatever. But I really loved playing jazz and jazz rock fusion and playing out in front of people in that way. And I've gotten paid to do that too. So even made a CD once. So, I mean, I was recorded once, but I'm not very happy with that CD. I don't really like letting people listen to it. That was a bad day. Because the night before we decided to go into the studio, I got pretty drunk. So I was a little hungover. So I was not at my best. That was probably a mistake.
Sounds like a mistake. You know, I wonder what you play. Cause like the only trumpet song I really know is Taps. And that would be a little weird at a graduation.
I mean, for graduations and things like that, it's whatever the music is. Like it's usually fanfares and whatnot. And things like Pachelbel's Canon. That's for weddings usually. But I mean, I've done that too, playing in brass quintets and such. But yeah, I mean, my second stint in college, I was a music major, performance major. So like, that's where all that comes from. In fact, I was only about like three classes away from graduating with a music performance degree before I had my kids. So, then it was like a decade before I went back to school. So then I just went back to school for music. So, I mean, I actually have something like 200. Here's another thing about me, cause I'll just talk about me. I have something like 260 different credit hours of college credits, which is a lot of college credits. If anybody knows,
it's like 10 semesters
to get a degree. Yeah. Yeah. Right. Full like usually you get a college degree, you need like 128 to 150 somewhere in there, depending on the degree. So there you go. I have, cause I was an electrical engineering major and then I was a music major and then I was a writing major. Well, fine arts.
I was an English major. I never finished, but that's what I was. So I know that it doesn't take much to do that, Chris. So
I have a degree. I have a diploma. It hangs on my wall. It doesn't do me any good, but it's there.
I was only joking about the Taps thing. I hope you realize that. I didn't do my normal laugh at the end, but I was totally joking. So for me, I've never been to the East Coast. I've been to a lot of places. When I was a traveling paintball player across the country, I never ended up playing on the East Coast, but I did play quite a bit on the West Coast and in the South and everywhere else. But so one of these times I'm going to have to get over to Queen City Conquest or something on the East Coast and see what that's like. That's a wish list. So make that happen, Chris.
It's cheap. You have a place to stay for free for that.
Yeah, you think that would work out. All right, cool. I'll bring my wife and kids over. We'll hang out. It'll be fun.
Well, I don't know about that. Like, I mean, I have some space. Usually I have like more than one person that stays here with me too. So
I was just joking. So anyhow, let's get to the main topic, which is really all about the Hobgoblins, the listeners of Hobbs and Friends. I don't usually read a lot of mail during the shows. Probably because I'm self-centered and already decided what I want to talk about. And I'm not talking about these Hobgoblins, but I'm just kidding about that. So let's just go. I got two emails. When I did a call to action, I got a bunch of tweets and stuff, but I wasn't smart enough to tell you how to hashtag those so I could find them again later. So those are lost to the ether. But next time we will get that. So like for episode 50 or something, we can do that, Chris, and then we'll be set.
Sounds good.
All right. So as far as emails go, I got two Hex Talk specific emails. And as the Hobgoblins know, there's going to be a Hex Talk podcast of its own. So what I'm going to do is put those in maybe the first premiere episode from Cody Mazza and Del Teagler. Thank you guys for sending those emails. It's just going to be a little while longer before you get any answers from us. But the next one, do you read or you want me to?
I'll go first. Right. So Pete Segretti. Segretti? Pete Segretti?
That's right. Yep.
All right. Hey, guys. Loving the podcast to death so far. You guys really knock it out of the park with each new episode. The question I have is, how do you handle long-running campaigns with such a high level of lethality that is found in OSR games? How can anything particularly meaningful get done with what can sometimes feel as a revolving door cast of characters? Stay safe.
Awesome. You got any answers for that, Chris?
Well, so I don't know what people consider OSR games, but I know that, and you can all laugh at me or whatever, but like I played a ton of 3.5 and some Pathfinder, and once you get up into the higher levels, that game is super lethal. Like you could, it's like all save or die stuff at that point. So, I mean, I haven't played enough OSR stuff that people would consider OSR to answer that question from that point of view. But from the point of view of just high lethality games, like hopefully if your characters have survived for that long or they have some sort of connection to a location, it ceases to be about the characters so much and it becomes more about the ongoing story and the locations and the NPCs that become important to those places. So, and then of course, whatever characters have survived the longest tend to be the focus pieces at that point. But really it's just, I mean, I don't really know how you sustain that for that kind of play because I mean, that would be the way that I would do it. I would be focusing on those things. And then always kind of trying giving these new characters that come in some sort of connection to what's going on. But I'm, you know, a story-based gamer, so there's that stuff. I mean, half the fun to me of the OSR stuff is the emergent play anyway, where like really the story about these characters is what has happened to them over the course of their lives. So I don't really know how to balance that. What about you? You're the expert, not me.
I've never said I was the expert of anything. But
that's okay. I will.
All right. Okay. That makes all the difference then. I think you're right. Really, most times in the OSR games that I play in, they're normally about – they're drop in, drop out. So you're going to have a revolving cast anyway. So it becomes whatever stories the people that are playing at the time are going after. So if you get different groups of people playing, from your point of view as the GM, the story is going to – you know, center around whoever's playing at the time. Whereas the players, their individual stories are going to center around what they're doing and what the players know. In a lot of OSR games, the focus isn't always separate as much in some other games from player and character. Most of the time, I'm not saying you're playing Chris Sneezak, the bank guy in a D&D world, but you don't have a huge backstory or a huge story around your character. You could role play your character however you want, and some people do, but I would say that most of the time you're mostly playing yourself, and the story of that character will come out over time. But if you change characters in the middle, it doesn't always make a big difference. Right or wrong, you know, I'm not going to judge about that, but in my experience in the Keep on the Borderlands game, which is the longest running OSR game ever played, I had a character who was very influential and had a bunch of things he wanted to do. His name was Tagen, and he ended up going basically completely turned into chaos and became an NPC and then became a foil for the other characters. But at one point I could have saved him and I was making a temporary character. So I just made up some cleric and didn't plan on playing him very long, but now that cleric is like fifth level in this finale and Tagen's gone. So, and in some ways I'm a little disappointed, but I know all the other characters that I've interacted with. I know all the stories that go on around the location. So like you said, it's not necessarily about the characters as much as it about is that area, you know, so like Waterdeep or Sigil or however you would say it, you know, those places probably become the main character, and the individual characters might be strong players or I wouldn't quite say protagonists, but nearly so, which is kind of a different way to look at it, right?
Yeah, absolutely. That's why when, in my opinion, this is just me spouting an opinion, when you're playing an OSR style game where there is a high level of lethality and there's a lot of exploration and emergent quality to the game, you want a strong location, a central location for those player characters to go back to all the time and people there that they can interact with, because that's really the foundation in a lot of ways of your game. Like I always like to talk about beat structure, and it applies in this too, because it's about pacing, right? It's a pacing thing. Like you go out and you do the dangerous thing and then you need to go back somewhere to rest And then there can be that other thing where you're not just exploring and fighting stuff, but you're talking to people. And that's usually the place where you do get to do the most talking to people and getting story hooks and story threads and finding new things to go explore on like the hex map. Like, yeah, there's this rumor about this thing over here. Okay, let's go there now. Like, that's kind of how that all works, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think we're on the same page there. Pete was a player in that game with Jay Murphy that was the main topic for episode one. So things, you know, they come back around, right? So that's pretty cool. All right. So the next email is Roger Braslett. How many unique tidbits does Hobbs have for future All About You segments? thanks, Roger.
Do you have a list?
I don't. I usually make it up right before, or I just kind of, like last episode, I just kind of wandered around until I was like, oh, yeah, here's one, and just said it. I actually talked about this on another podcast, and I mentioned that someone had asked me, but I couldn't remember where. I probably read this email from Roger, but that's a good question. And like I said there, life goes on, so there's always going to be things happening that I can talk about in Everything About You. So have no fear, Hobgoblins. There's always going to be an Everything About You.
Wow, that's a bold statement. Always going to be in Everything About You.
Well, when you say the whole thing, there's always going to be something I hate about. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, there you go. I mean, because Misdirect and Marcus had many segments over the years, because we're like in year six now, and we've like rotated stuff in and out constantly. So like, I'll be interested to see if episode 100 of Hobbs and Friends, if they're still in Everything About You segment.
I understand, because I can't believe that there's been 25 episodes. On one hand, it's like unbelievable. On the other hand, it's like, oh my God, there's already been 25 episodes. So I can't imagine what it feels like when you're at 300 or 250 like you guys are. So,
well, remember, 25 is a whole year of podcasting for you, because it's an every other week show. So, I mean, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah, but I mean, it wasn't until February. So we did some extras. Oh, there is the lost episode, right? So that's part of it, right? So it's really probably not 25, but we won't talk about that, people. That's a secret just amongst us.
You want me to read this next one, or you want to read this next one?
Yeah, it's a big one, so you do what you want with it.
Sure. Okay, here we go. Timothy Drennan, you put out the call. I'd imagine you are buried in these at this point. Use any, all, or none. Number one, I have been trying to find a way to add a tribute advancement system to my OSR games. I had what I thought was an original idea, which turns out to mimic a mechanic from Rollmaster, which I only played once in my teens. The idea is to roll 3d6 straight down, but roll twice for each stat. The lower roll is the starting attribute, and the higher is the potential max. Players could then add a point to two attributes per level, or one point to a single attribute above a certain threshold, say 14+. Players would start out weaker than a 3d6 straight down character, but could become a little stronger than average if they survive. It would also give the player a sense of where a character's inner strengths lie. A chart to increase or decrease stats within these minimum and maximum limits at certain age thresholds could also be used to give flavor to playing older or younger characters. So I throw it to you, Hobbs and friends. Any pitfalls I'm missing? Do any OSR systems use a similar mechanic? Any suggestions to improve on the idea? That's a huge question, and totally a design question.
Yeah, that's a pretty crunchy question for Hobbs and friends. I feel like I have seen some games that do that. And I was going to look it up, but I never did, because, you know, I'm the awesomest researcher ever for a podcast guy.
Totally.
Honestly, it's probably a little deeper than I would go. I'm usually playing like BX, you know, that you roll 3d6 straight down and that's what you got. And there's five classes, because I dump elves and halflings. So there's not a lot of the games I run. But if someone wanted to do something like this, I mean, I'd be down for it. I can see, you know, the cool thing about it. Increasing your stats. And sometimes I'll add some DCC or other game mechanics into my BX games where I'll say you can push or you can do whatever to adjust your strength, or, hey, you can do that, but you're down permanently a point of strength, but nothing that's creating it so codified as this, where, you know, this is where you are now and this is what your maximum potential is. What about you?
This is so look, man, like I play D&D and I play Dungeon World, right? Both those games allow you to increase your stats.
It's true.
Over the course of time, like those, they have mechanics built into them for that kind of stuff. I'm not sure how it fits the OSR aesthetic. Like, is that part of what the OSR aesthetic is? Like this idea of increasing your stats, getting better over time and whatnot, aside from just the leveling up stuff that's in the actual class levels.
It could be, I mean, cause Rollmaster is an old school game for sure. And so is Champions, where they talk about it, but I don't know. I mean, when you're talking about simple game design systems, probably not, but that, I mean, just to go back to ask if it's OSR or not, Who am I to say?
I guess what I would like to see, I mean, you want the emergent quality, right? Like that's whole part of the thing. Like you, that's why you roll the 3d6 straight down and then you use the lower and the higher. It's that to me is fascinating because you could have that, that big gap, like somebody that starts off with a 7 strength, but you can see they could get to an 18 or an 18 strength if they, you know, focus on that. But then the question is how do you focus on that? Like, where do you get your points? Is it every level? Do you get a point? Well, like where, how do you make that so that it's playable, right? That is the question.
Yeah, just probably make it up. That's what I do. But like you say, I mean, over time to keep it, try and keep it fair or keep it a mechanic. Anytime you can't just rulings, not rules all the time. Eventually all rulings become rules if you consistently use them. So.
Well, yeah, sure. I mean, this is obviously a rule, right? Like you need a rule for this.
If you're going to do it. Yeah, I would say.
You could even make it a rule where it could be like a rule that is more like a ruling too. Like, sure, as you level up, there are certain levels where you get to put a point into something. But there could also be things like, well, there's also like 3 floating points out there. Like you can get these 3 points over the course of time if you do things in play. And or the game master can just say, well, you've been doing this for so long, have a point in this because of all the things that you've been doing. That's how you actually build a rule that becomes a ruling rule. That's what I like to call them. Like rulings, the rules that are fuzzy so that you can just make rulings off of them, but without them being completely infinite, right? So like there's 3 fuzzy points out there that you can use over the course of the character's life.
Okay, cool.
So that's a way that you could design that if you wanted to.
All right. So, you know, you could put that back to the workshop, if you wanted to take it to MMP.
That'd be more like the garage though, right?
Okay, yeah, boop? Garage.
Access all right, granted.
So he's got another saving throw question. I'm going to skip that and just go down to the bottom one because, hey, we're running out of time. So number 3, I'm on the fence about investing time and effort in learning and running Axe. Sell me, you beautiful bastard. Sell me.
Go ahead. I don't know anything about it.
Adventure Conqueror King system is BX. It's a retro clone, so it's trying to tweak or clean up difficult areas. And one of those in old school games is when your characters become lords or champions and then they make their own areas, right? So Axe is really kind of about answering that question and answering it from first level all the way to however long you play. So just like Dungeon Crawl Classics is immediately trying to get you into crazy ass magic and dimensions and gods and patrons at first level, Axe is trying to get you involved in the economics or at the very least the system of government involved in whatever game you're playing, however it works. So it's pretty crunchy. I mean, the guy who wrote it's an economist and it adds some things. And honestly, some of it I don't use, but I like a lot of the house rules that I've added to my BX game are already in Axe. So that's another good thing about it. Other than that, do your own goddamn research, Tim Drennan.
Wow.
I don't work for Autark. I'm just kidding. All right. So you want to do Avi? He's like probably one of your guys that I stole. So,
I mean, is it really stealing? We're all just misdirected mark folks, right? Like there's hobgoblins, know, there's the markers. I mean, you can have more than one badge. You don't have to just like be on one side or the other. It's all about inclusion here, man.
They're called markers.
I don't know what they're called. We don't really call them anything.
I didn't know they were called markers.
We call them the vassals at times because they're part of that hashtag chat room for life and the queen's in there with her iron fist. We have the court. So, I mean, there's that too. There's any number of jokes that exist around that.
All right. I like it. So go ahead.
All right. V. Okay. If anybody gets that, then you're good to go. Hi, Jason. Here are some rough questions. Feel free to tweak them to suit the show format. What is the main difference between an OSR game, 5th edition D&D, and Dungeon World? I mean, that's a whole show in and of itself, right?
Well, it's a whole, my whole show is about that. So I'm on 25 episodes.
Yeah, that's true. The short answer, I suppose, is.
Yeah, one sentence.
Dungeon World's more about story-based rulings in a lot of ways. OSR games are more about emergent play, which is really weird because Dungeon World's about emergent play too, but just in a very different way. And 5th edition D&D has a lot of those elements from both of those games, but tries to take it in a much more traditional space. But that's the short answer.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Yeah, there's a few more rules in 5th edition D&D that actually like you have to follow. Like there's still ruling space in there, but there's a lot less fuzziness. That's how I would say it.
a lot of it, I think you could say it has to do with what layer you play in most of the time with these games as well.
I can also give you an answer between OSR and Dungeon World based on an episode that we just did called Fortune in the Middle or Fortune at the End. Dungeon World is a Fortune in the Middle game, and OSR games tend to be Fortune at the End games. And what that means, real quick, one, go listen to the episode, but the short version of that is like when you roll the dice, then there's a result in an OSR game. Like you roll the dice and a thing just happens. In Dungeon World, you roll the dice and then there's usually some choices to be made after that. And that changes gameplay a ton.
Yeah, that's similar to talking about what the layers are, right? Because, you know, you're rolling to find out what happens, whereas you kind of just talk through it in an OSR game. And 5e is somewhere in the middle, I would say, most of the time.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, the OSR game, as soon as, like, say you're making an attack roll in an OSR game, right? Like, you roll the dice and then the thing happens, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, either you hit or you missed. In Dungeon World, when you're hack and slashing, you roll the dice and then there's generally, there can be some more choices after that. That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I'll add some more too, but that's just the way I run my games, where something else might happen depending on the dice or the narrative or whatever. But game mechanically, I don't think that exists in an OSR game, but it does in Dungeon World. Raw, right? Rules as written.
And that's where I was trying to hit at. Because, I mean, how we run games is never actually how the games are written in a lot of ways. Like, we will all modify based on how we feel like playing that day.
Totally agree. So I'll pick one of these questions. Because, like, we're already at 32 minutes, Chris. Your introduction was way longer than I expected.
Sorry about that.
No, I'm just kidding.
I do a lot of stuff.
All right. So what do you do to prep an encounter? See, that's kind of a loaded question. If I'm setting it up for a hex crawl, obviously I have a lot more work to do up front, but not as much to do afterwards because the game doesn't really start until the players interact with it. Most of the time, I mean, I can do as little as write a creature on a single line for a random encounter table. Most of the time I start with a map because if I'm playing online, that's what takes me the longest to do, doing the dynamic lighting and all that. It takes me so long to do that normally I haven't had time to actually prep anything else in the dungeon, and I just make it up after that. What about you?
So can we focus this question down in some way, shape, or form? Because prepping an encounter, I assume to run this at my table. Is that what we're talking about?
Yeah, you define it however you want, and we'll go from there.
I don't play OSR games all that often. I've very, very rarely run them, so like this is tricky for me to answer from the OSR lens. I guess if I'm going to kick back to my third edition stuff, how I would prep would be like I would want my map. I would want my what the bad guys are trying to accomplish. I would want my whatever the stakes are. And I would want my monster stat block. And then after that, it's good to go, right? And you don't even need all that stuff if the game is about exploration. Like you're just like people are just like looking around and they will pull out like come upon monsters. Then it's even easier because you just need your map and your monster. Because and maybe an explanation for yourself if you want for your sanity why the monster's there. But if you don't want that, then you can funhouse it up and be like, well, sure, there's a roper totally in this room that doesn't have any rock anywhere. It's just floating in air. Like sure, why not? I don't know.
Yeah, that makes you just figure it out as you go, which is what we talk about, having the GM play as much as the players do. So,
oh, absolutely.
That's cool. So you want to go to these reviews then?
Yeah. And why don't you hit me with them? Because I don't have the phone that you're about to read them from.
Yeah, because I'm not smart enough to figure out how to put it on the show notes. All right. So we had a few reviews for a while, and some of these could have been old, and I just finally found them. So they're by Ron Blessing. Great walk down memory lane. Great show. I love how tight it is when sticking to its self-imposed time constraints. Hobbs and his friends provide a great listen and continually take me back to my teens when talking about their games. Ron Blessing is another marker, I would say, because I hear his name on some other shows. So thank you, Ron.
He's also Ron Blessing. Like, I was listening to him podcast before I was podcasting. The game's the thing and some other things.
That's pretty awesome then.
Savage Worlds Bar and Grill, I think he was on for a while.
He must be, because I remember Brett saying something about it when I was on the Gaming and BS about Ron Blessing and Savage Worlds. So thank you very much, Ron.
Yeah, he did that show with Christian Serrano for a while, too, that I can't remember the name of, but that was good.
That was a Savage Worlds show. Yep, that's what I was thinking of.
It was, yep.
It came with a 5-star review, and man, I really appreciate it. I appreciate it even more when I get some of your background, because I don't really know who you are. Sorry, buddy. I'm not I'm a very newcomer to the podcasting world. I just talked to Chris one day and said, hey, I'm going to do a podcast. And he goes, all right, sounds good. Go after it. So that's what we did. All right. So yep. Here's another one. Hot Dog the Barbarian, who I have no idea who this is. The Podcast Sweet Spot. This is an excellently paced and formatted podcast. Hobbs keeps the show moving with his opinions, and that encourages his guests to also be bold with theirs. And what guests? Jose is hilarious, the Hoff inspiring. I've dug them all. Great show. Well, thank you very much, Hot Dog the Barbarian. I'm pretty sure Jose or Hoff wrote this review, though.
That seems about right. That's totally Jose, then. If I'm going to guess, it's Jose.
I'm just kidding. I don't know if he did or not. Either way, I appreciate the review. Here's the last one. Tanglebone70, who is actually Chris Lorisella, who I met at North Texas in June. Awesome guy. Production is key. What I love about this podcast is despite the casual tone, the production value is high. After 30 to 40 minutes, I take my earbuds out and I feel like I was just hanging out with some friends talking about our favorite games. However, if you take a closer inspection, there are many tangents which plague other podcasts that are avoided by Hobbs. For example, long-running or inside jokes, exhaustive analysis of local sports or professional soapbox manifestos on topics only tangentially to the podcast. Thankfully, these are avoided here, and instead you get a tight, well-thought-out podcast that is a pleasure to listen to. Bravo. Chris Tanglebones Lorisella. Chris, well, thanks, man. I think some people like inside jokes, like Hobgoblins. You know, I'm pretty sure you voted on that, so I don't know, but the rest of it, I mean, all of these kind of talk about how tight we are and stick to the format. And Chris, I think you're a big part of that. So I want to thank you again for editing this show and being involved, you know, as a mentor, because like you and Sean have really been the guys who told me everything. So those are the three reviews. Thanks so much, guys. So I'm going to toss out some patrons. We got a new patron this month, Jason Vines, who I also follow on Facebook, man. Thank you for supporting the show. And then Tim Shorts and Ray Otis, two other great guys who have their own patrons. So I really appreciate you guys supporting Hobbs and Friends. I mean, you can't really say enough about patrons, can you, Chris?
No, you can't. Like, patrons are what make the show go, because without them, it's hard to sometimes get up and do it.
Yeah, it's really hard to find the time. Honestly, I mean, I love doing it. I don't plan on ever stop doing it. But it's nice to know people are listening. You know, it's awesome. So thanks, guys, for that. If anyone else wants to be a patron, you can support the show on Patreon, OSRN Hobbs. I also want to mention that I have some people who help support the show in different ways, and they don't want to be named. So I want to take this time to thank those guys. I'm not using the proper terminology that I was told to use. So thanks to the undisclosed patrons out there. I had a thing on here about why people stop, you know, patroning show, but honestly, I don't think it's worth talking about. So we'll skip it.
Okay.
If anyone wanted to talk to you about, you know, the show or maybe podcasting or any of the other stuff you do, Chris, how would they get a hold of you?
Well, you can catch me at Misdirected Mark on Twitter or at the Light 101 on Twitter. You can also just email me, Chris at misdirectedmark.com. I'd be happy to answer or talk about anything. And the G Plus community, Misdirected Mark G Plus community is a great place to go. Probably the best place to go to chat with people. We have a pretty decent community. It's not as big as the Hobbs and Friends community, which is also a really good place to go. But you know, those OSR folks are just rabid about their OSR games and about Hobbs and Friends, which I greatly appreciate because, you know, it's part of what I do too.
Yeah, it's awesome because you were one of the first networks to have an OSR show and, in my opinion, the best one. So
I will also say, in my opinion, the best one, but you know, I'm biased.
All right. Yeah. Thanks. I'm not me though. I usually say how many people we got in the Hobbs and Friends of the OSR G Plus community, but this is an old one. I think it's 473. I looked at today. We have bypassed gaming and BS, so they're no longer a challenger to us, but they kind of gave up. No, they gave up though. They like went through and got rid of like bots and stuff, you know, geez. So their number dropped down. And
I do that too, actually.
In this one you do? In the Hobbs and Friends community?
Not in the Hobbs and Friends community, in the Misdirected Mark community.
Oh yeah. Well, I'm pretty sure there's no bots in here. It's just only active community members. Hmm. All right. So if you wanted to contact me, my personal Twitter is at Hobbs Indeed. I talk about gaming there, but I also talk about poker and life and whatever. So that's why it's my personal one. But I'm off and on at OSR and Hobbs Twitter feed. I already mentioned the Patreon. My email is hobbsandfriends@misdirectedmark.com. That's Hobbs, the letter N, friends. So send more emails, do more reviews, send us more Twitter, but maybe hashtag, Hobbs 50. That'll be on the episode 50. We'll do it again. What do you think, Chris? Sound cool?
That's good. Hobbs 50. I like it. Hashtag Hobbs 50. There you go.
Yep. Hashtag Hobbs 50. And then we'll do this again. We'll have Chris on again and we'll do all that. So you got any parting words, Chris? I was thinking, man, I need, like, you guys have mic drop. We out. You have, hey, let's go kill some monsters. Like, I don't know, Gaming NBS does something, I can't remember, but everyone seems to have an outro, like a thing they say at the end, you know?
I'm pretty sure Brett says good night and good gaming, doesn't he?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. Good gaming all. It doesn't make sense because then Sean does his whole patrons.
It's true. I mean, I think you should go and listen to Mr. Rogers and figure out what he does to end his show. Because, I mean, Hobbs and Friends of the OSR is like the Mr. Rogers of podcasting. So,
man, I know you say that all the time, and I don't get why you say that. But then some people say I'm super nice and it's so neighborly on here.
Yeah.
But then other people say I always give my big, vast opinions and do whatever. So I don't know where that comes from. I don't hear that dude saying, oh, this guy shouldn't be saying that or whatever. Who cares, right?
It's funny that you say that because, like, you do, you're such a nice, you have that, like, nice Midwestern thing going on, and yet you do sometimes have some pretty strong opinions, and I'm like, all right, Jason, you say what you got to say. I'll back you up.
I really considered making up a blog that would be called Random Screed, and then I would have guest posters that could just go off on rants and talk about it. I talked to Chris Kudelik of Hydra Cooperative about it, and we both thought it was a pretty good idea. I just haven't done it yet, so... anyway, I guess you got any last words?
Yeah, I guess all I want to say is Hobbs and Friends of the OSR is part of the Misdirected Market Network, the media arm of Encoded Designs.